Okay, we're in Romans chapter 1. How about be my timekeeper? And I don't know if the bell's going to ring or not, but give me a 5-minute warning. It's 10:15. 10?
10:15, we have to be out of here.
Yeah, 10. So give me a 10:10 warning, okay, if you would. Because I don't watch the clock, as some of you know.
We
got lots of folks. I knew I had to open that for somebody, and I was going to say who's going to step through it and mark that person with a mark on his forehead. We have lots of folks out today. It's a holiday weekend, I understand, and so lots of folks taking advantage of that opportunity if you get that day off. How many of you get that day off? Two? 50. So anyway, we're glad to have you if you're visiting with us, and we're particularly glad to have you. I want to express my appreciation to Eric for taking the class last week on short notice. It's really neat to have folks in the congregation who will take a class on such short notice, and I know do a good job. He gave me a copy of his notes, and so I really do appreciate Eric doing that. He told me that in the latter part of it, he did go back and touch on where we left off last time, but for the sake of the tape, which unfortunately I didn't think to make sure that he had a tape recorder, So for the sake of the tape, I want to go back and pick up at least summarizing what remains in chapter 1, and then we'll pick up in chapter 2. The book of Romans, and this first section particularly, the first 5 chapters, is talking about 2 different ways that you can be made righteous. And you can say it a lot of different ways. You can say it, there's 2 ways to be saved. And the first one is talking about the way that we all, and we all have to find out that the first way doesn't work for us before we'll really go to the second way. And I think there's a drought in religion in talking about this first way. Maybe in the past we were a little bit heavy, maybe way much heavy on talking about the first way, and maybe not having a complete understanding in some ways, at least in some cases, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything except myself. But we're pretty heavy on the doing part and pretty heavy on being righteous and living righteously. And there's still a need for that as long as you understand how righteousness comes, how true righteousness comes, and what the relationship is in you living righteously and your being righteous. There's a difference. And we need to understand that. And when we do, when we get these things in our mind and we understand these things, then it really does... It takes the uncertainty out of our lives. And we have a definiteness about us. And we can have a security because of that. And so we're going to keep knocking this thing back and forth and back and forth until hopefully something is going to be said in a way that's going to fit for everybody. It's going to fall in place for everybody. Because even those of us who grew up in Christian homes, we sometimes need some tweaking, as it were, to help us really comprehend so that we can have security. And so the Romans chapter 1, verse 18 through chapter 3, verse 20 is talking about the first way that we try to be righteous, and that is by keeping law. And unfortunately, there's lots and lots of ways to say that, and some of them really sound good. And most people have bought into this first way. And this first way makes really good moral salt of the earth people. because it's fundamentally based on what I don't do. I don't do this, and 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 I don't do this. And it's really, there's a lot of difference between being righteous by talking about what you don't do and being righteous for what somebody else has done for you. And whenever we talk about being righteous because of our actions and what we either don't do and or do, then our salvation is not really by grace. And I'm afraid that many of us have this hybrid system. If you ask us if we believe in grace, we say yes, but. And then we add something there. And we really need to get all of this straight so that we can understand it and comprehend it. And that's what we're all about here in this first whole section here. And in chapter 1, and remember 1:18 to 3:20, we're talking about how man tries to be righteous under law or by keeping law. And Romans 1:18 through chapter 3, verse 20 is that discussion. And again, I would ask you to turn over to Romans chapter 3, verse 21. It says, but now a righteousness from God apart from law is made known. Everything up to that point is talking about how we try to be righteous through law. And in reality, even though we don't realize it, apart from God. But we use law, our relationship to God. And I think it takes a while for us to comprehend this and admit this. But how many people are there in the world whose relationship to God is through law? I mean, our righteousness, our relationship to God is based on law and our keeping law. And there's some real problems with that because you might feel like you do okay today, but tomorrow you don't do so good. And so you lose your security. And so it's all about, if you live under law, it's all about what you do for me today. And you're in and you're out, and you're in and you're out, and you never know if you're in or you're out. And we have all kind of things. Have you ever heard anybody pray, Lord, forgive us since we last stood justified in your sight? You ever heard anybody pray that? Well, I've heard lots of people pray that. Forgive us. Think about that. Forgive us since we last stood justified in your sight. When might that be? Well, that'd be the last time I prayed. And so, is it true that we're forgiven from prayer to prayer? And if we die somewhere in between prayer, we're not going to make it? And the only real hope that we have is maybe we'll get to die and we'll have enough time to say, Lord, forgive me of my sins since I last stood justified in your sight. Does that sound like what Jesus Christ died to give you? Does that sound like a level of confidence you want to live with? But I'm telling you, there are lots of folks that test that pretty well. Maybe that's a little bit of an overstatement, but that pretty well summarizes the hope that lots of folks have. Is that we don't really have a confidence that if we were to die, we'd go to heaven. And the preacher's hammered us enough about it, so if he asks us that, then we say, yeah, I would, you know. But deep down, we really don't feel it any more than we ever did. Because we can't feel it, honestly, until we know that. You know, I used to think that was the most arrogant thing that somebody could say. And I heard people say, I know that if I died today, tonight, I know that I would go to heaven. And in my mind, while I certainly wouldn't say that to that person, in my mind I was thinking, that has to be the most arrogant person I know. And you see, from my perspective, it was arrogant. Because my perspective of salvation was what you do. But when your understanding of your righteousness, when you understand what the Bible teaches, that righteousness is a gift from God, then it's not an arrogant thing to say that I know that if I were to die tonight, I would go to heaven. And it makes all the difference in the world where you place your trust. And that's what this is all about. Do you place your trust in your law-keeping ability Or is there somewhere else we can go? Well, until we get to 321, we don't know there's any other place. That's all we've got. And there are lots of folks who are going to live and die under law, and that's all there ever will be for them. And until the gospel comes along in their life, there is no alternative to them. They have law, and that's all there is. And we're going to find when we get to look at Romans, I mean, I don't mind running ahead so that we can know. Look at chapter 3, verse 20. Somebody read 3:20 for me.
For no human being will be justified in his sight by works of the law, since through the law comes knowledge of sin.
You need to let that sink in, son. No human being will be justified in his sight through law. Well, if all you ever know is law, then what hope do you have? Well, that's what we're talking about right now in 1:18 to 3:20. What is it like to live under law and then die and face God? In chapter 2, we're going to see how is God going to judge this person who lives his whole life and he dies under law. How's he going to judge that person? I don't know about you, but that's bothered me all my life. And I heard people preach when I was a kid and growing up that God, when we stand before God, he's going to open the Bible up and he's going to judge us out of the Bible. And I'm thinking, well, what about the guy that never had a Bible? How fair is that deal? To be judged by a standard that you never knew anything about. And I don't believe that's true anymore. I believed it because it's what I was taught. But we're looking at, and we are, hopefully, each one of us, putting what we believe to the test of the Scriptures and see if it's true or not. And like we require other people to do, let's put what we believe to the test of the Scripture, and if it's not what the Scripture teaches, let's let it go. Now, let me hasten to say to you, don't believe it just because I say it. That's not good enough. It's got to be in the Scriptures. So, let's look at Romans chapter 1. We're looking in Romans chapter 1 at how man departs from God. And you have a sequential departure. It always starts in the same place. Anybody remember where it starts? Thanklessness. Thanklessness. And that seems rather benign, really, when you get down to it. Verse 21. For although they knew God, and remember, go back to verse 18. Here's what this whole section is talking about. God's wrath is going to be revealed from heaven against certain people. Who are those people that God's wrath is going to be revealed against? Verse 21 says, although they knew God, they glorified him not as God, nor gave thanks to him. There's where it all starts, right here. And we need about 5 sermons on gratitude. Because it's really important that we express gratitude and feel gratitude and acknowledge gratitude to God. Because everything else is based on that. If you don't understand that everything that you have is a gift from God, then you need to go back to square one. Because that's where everything starts. You don't have any good thing in your life that's not a gift from God. That's what Paul wrote to Corinthians. He said, what do you have that you did not receive as a gift? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as if you did not receive it? He says, who makes you different from anybody else? And that whole context there, he's reminding us that everything we have is from God. And somebody says, and I have had people say to me, God never gave me anything. I've had people say that. I say, well, what would you think if God took the oxygen out of your air for about 3 minutes? What would you have? And you say, well, I worked hard for everything. Who gave you the ability to work hard? Are there people you know that don't have the ability to work hard due to no fault of their own? Why do you have that ability? And if you have a level of intelligence that allows you to get a certain job or a certain education, who gave you that? Who caused you to be born in a country where you had the opportunity to get an education and get a job? Did you? I don't think so. Everything that we have is a gift from God. You can't name anything that you have that's not a gift from God. And we, that needs to underlie everything in our lives. And when a person fails to understand and acknowledge that, that's the first step in departing from God. We like to feel independent. I don't owe anybody anything. I work for everything I've got. Boy, we admire that pioneer, that adventurous spirit, that independent spirit, don't we? Do you realize that's the first step away from God, to feel that independence? We need to acknowledge on every occasion, everything I have came from God. It's all a gift from Him. I'm just a steward. He just let me manage some of His stuff for a while. And when you live with that attitude, you're gonna act differently about it. And by the way, there needs to be a whole series of lessons, and sometime we'll have it based on John chapter 4, that we have our life divided up into God's part and my part. And God never intended that. And we further divide our lives into God's part and my part and my family's part and my boss's part and my part that's my, you know, my free time, my entertainment, my money, my this, my that. And we've got our life all divided up into little pies. I'm chasing a rabbit here just for a minute, but I won't stay here long. God never intended that. It's all God's. And you're not taking anything away from God whenever you do take your family on a vacation. You're not taking anything away from God. Not if you do that as unto the Lord. Your life is one part. And it makes a difference when you see your life that way. Because that will help with this struggle about, okay, how much time do I give to God, and how much time do I give to my boss, and how much time do I give to my family, and how much of this? And we feel like we're robbing this one to give to this one and so forth, and we just get ourselves all tied up in knots. We need to view ourselves holistically as one whole part. And it's all God's. I don't have any money that's not God's. I don't have any time that's not God's. I don't have any talents. It's not God.
Are you allowed to ask questions?
Sure.
I guess that also begs the question for me sometimes is, why am I so blessed? Why was I born in this country and other people weren't? And it's so sometimes it's hard to come to grips with how come I'm here with all the opportunity and my health and my family and, you know, the things that I do have, and that, you know, there are people in this country suffering and there are people born in third world countries that have, you know, I mean, I think it's a, sometimes it's a hard thing to accept also on the other side of being blessed.
Yeah, it is. And we feel some guilt sometimes if we're not careful. Well, and God doesn't want us to feel guilt. We go back in the Old Testament and we find some people that were extremely rich. You know, Abraham was. But not everybody was, by the way. And that doesn't mean that, you know, riches are a definite sign that God approves of your lifestyle. We pretty well know that, right? We know some folks whose lifestyle is, you know, a long ways from God, and they're pretty rich, right? So we don't equate those two things. But we do say, and we do acknowledge, everything is from God. And if God, you know, I don't know why. It wasn't any choice that I made. You know, and I was told, I've made lots of trips and taught in schools in different places in the world, in China and Africa and different places. And I always grew up believing that Americans were the smartest and the this and the this and the this, and found out that wasn't true. It's not that we're any dumber or smarter or whatever. But I had people tell me when I went to Africa, okay, now when you first started going over there, people said, now you need to gear your lessons toward about a fourth grade level or whatever. That's not true. Those people are every bit as intelligent as anybody over here. And had they been given the opportunities that we've been given, they would have done as well, and probably because of, if they had any of their environment and their background, probably better than most of us. That's one reason, you know, we've been told that Asians that come over here, that they're a lot smarter. They're not any smarter. They're more disciplined. They're more, they came over, they didn't come over to party. They came over to get an education, because when they go back, they're going to be the one everybody's looking to. So it's not just enough to make a grade. They got to understand it. And they work to do that. And so it's not a matter of intelligence. It's a matter that I grew up knowing I could go to college if I wanted to, and they didn't grow up with that knowledge. And so, It's only by God's grace. That's the only answer I have for you. And he doesn't want you to feel guilty about it. He gave it to you to use in a way as a steward. And so we have, you know, it brings actually on us more responsibility to use it wisely, doesn't it? So the first step away from God is thanklessness. And then the second one we talked about in verse 21 and 22, we elevate our reasoning, and it's this independent thing that we have such an obsession with. We elevate our reasoning above God's revelation. And we think we're smarter than God. Now, we'd never say, most of us, more people would say that today than used to, but, you know, most of us wouldn't say that. But we get to the point where we look at what the Bible says, and we look at science, or we look at this, and we choose what science says. Or we choose what people of our age say. And so that's the next step away from God. And we, first of all, we're thankless and we elevate our reasoning above God's reasoning. And by the way, he says, claiming to be wise, they became, verse 22, they became morons. M-O-R-O-S is a Greek word. And we've already talked about it, so we won't go there. And then the next step in verse 23 and verse 25 is to worship things rather than the Creator. Each one of these is built on the other, and they are successive steps further and further away from God. The third one is worship and serve things. Do we live in a society that worships things? Whether it be jobs, cars, houses, bank accounts, whatever. Things that you can see. We worship things. How do you know what you worship? Well, what do you spend your time, all your time on? You know, you become like your God. You become obsessed with those things. And then the next one, and this is where I ended 2 weeks ago, verse 24 through 27, unbridled immorality. And he specifically talks about two sins. And at this point, he begins to say, and God gave them over to these things. The King James Version says, God gave them up to these things. I'd hate for God to give up on me. Wouldn't you? When it comes to this point, you're getting pretty far away from God. And he specifically designates, talking about this immorality, he specifically designates two immoral sins. What are they? Homosexuality and lesbianism. And he's really, really specific about it in that text, isn't he? By the way, talk about the news. Do you know what happened yesterday? Our president, it's in the headlines today, our president did away with no ass, no tail in the military. And so now, homosexuals can serve in our military just like anybody and everybody else. Now you talk about reading the headlines. You tell me where we are as a nation. And I tell you what's even scarier than that to me is you talk to the young people of today, some of our children, about how they feel about it. They've had it pumped into them through every avenue for the last 10 or 15 years, everywhere. I mean, how many shows, how many movies can you watch that don't have that undercurrent in them? It's everywhere. It's everywhere. And when you keep putting it out as an agenda, it's going to have an effect. Don't think it's not going to have an effect. And it's having its effect on us. But God says in verse 26, because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust or passions of dishonor. And then he goes on and talks about what's natural and what's not natural. It is not natural for men to have relationships with men or women to have relationships with women. That is not natural. And so when somebody says they don't have a choice, you better say, here we are. Here's what the Bible says. Here's what our society says. Which one will you believe? We fall back to our last step, don't we? Which one are you going to choose to believe? Well, if you're going to be politically correct and you're going to be in a business environment today and so forth, and you know, it certainly is going to help you to believe that this is something that somebody can't help. And by the way, look at verse 28, the last verse, it's 27, excuse me, receiving in themselves due penalty for their, what does your Bible say? Perversion. And the word literally means to forsake the right path. That's what that word, this translated perversion in NIV means, to forsake the right path. And then there's one more step here, and we ended there last time, and Eric picked this up this last time, so but for the sake of the tape, let's put it on there. Furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, there's your last step. What is it? You decide there is no God. And so we've gone through this series of steps, thanklessness. We elevate our reasoning above God's revelation. We worship and serve created things, number three. Number four is unbridled immorality. And number five is no God. Now, that only makes sense. If you're going to live this lifestyle, this perversion lifestyle, then what do you want to think about judgment before God? It ain't going to happen, right? I mean, it's going to be hard to live this lifestyle and then believe you're going to stand before God and be judged based on your morality. And so the easiest thing to do is to tell yourself what? There's no God. And you see, your problem is not really God. Your problem is not really heaven. You know what your problem is? Hell. You don't want to believe there's a hell. And so in order to get rid of hell, you know what you sacrifice? Because it sounds a lot more noble. You sacrifice heaven. And so you say, I don't believe, I can't believe, you Christians, you believe all this stuff, you know, about God and heaven and there being all these angels flying around with halos and wings and, you know, they attribute all this stuff and there's this burning place and this red guy with a forked tail and a pitchfork. You believe all that. I can't swallow that stuff. I can't intellectually. Have you ever noticed that we always go to this? I can't intellectually. Well, I can't intellectually swallow that stuff either. But the Bible doesn't say that's what heaven and or hell is like, does it? So I find it really interesting that I can't think of an atheist that I've ever met, and I've talked to several. I can't think of one that I've ever met that he didn't say, I have a problem with the morality part. Because that really is a problem, morality. Or more specifically, immorality. But that doesn't sound very good. I don't want to have to defend that. So here's what I would, this will be my argument if I'm an atheist. Intellect. I just can't swallow all of this stuff that you Christians do. Now see, that makes me feel superior to you. And that's a put down to those who believe in heaven and hell and judgment and God. All these things I can't see. And so, he says, they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God. That's the final step in departing from God. You finally decide, I don't believe in God. I don't believe there's a God. And you need to know, if you understand these steps, then it's the best hope that you ever have of talking to a loved one who comes to that conclusion. And some of you have loved ones who've come to that conclusion in their life. And this is the best hope that you have. Whether you specifically sit down and talk with them about this, in your mind, when you understand it, you can know some things that you need to talk to them about. Furthermore, since they did not think it worthwhile to retain the knowledge of God, he gave them over to a depraved mind to do things that ought not to be done. They become filled with every kind of wickedness, evil, greed, depravity. They're full of envy, murder, deceit, strife, malice. They're gossips, slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant. Boy, this is a pretty tough list, isn't it? Boastful. They invent ways of doing evil. They disobey their parents. What did he say? Whoa. They what? What in the world is that doing right here in the middle of this list of horrible things? They're disobedient to parents. Does that belong in there? Evidently. I didn't put it in there. Now, that's not what I would think. You know, I don't know. If I was making up this list, I probably would have put that over on B list over here or C list somewhere. But God didn't. He put it right there with slanderers, God-haters, insolent, arrogant, boastful. He says they're senseless, faithless, heartless, ruthless, although, and listen to verse 32. And remember where we started out, verse 18. God's going to reveal His wrath on certain people. Verse 32. Although they know God's righteous decree. What is God's righteous decree? That those who do such things deserve death. That is God's righteous decree. That is not my decree. That is not what I say. It doesn't matter what I say. It matters what God says. What is God's judgment on people who are involved in this process of departing from God, who get to this point that they are have all these things in their life? And by the way, you know, we read through this list really quickly, and it doesn't mean much to us. But if we were to translate this list into these concepts, if we were to translate them into what's happening today, this is what's happening today. I mean, if we were to talk about arrogant and where we see that in our society, if we were to talk about boastful, if we were to talk about inventors of evil things, faithless, ruthless, heartless, if we were to talk about each one of those and how we see those things in our society today, they're real. All of these things are real. Here's God's righteous decree. They that do such things are what? Everybody say it together. Worthy of... No, you're not saying it. God's righteous decree is that they are worthy of death. That's what God said. Now, do you agree with it or not? You know, used to have a bumper sticker that said, God said it, I agree, and that settles it. Well, it doesn't matter if you agree or not. It only matters to you if you agree. If God said it, that settles it. You can leave the middle part out. We put that middle part in as if that makes a difference of whether or not that's true. If God said it, then it's good if you agree with it. But if you don't, it's still true. So our bumper sticker ought to say, God said it, it's true. Now, do you agree with it? That's up to you. That's your decision to make. But it's really, really important that you make the right decision. Because they that do such things as what? Well, something, and pick anyone out you want to. It just so happens that we have an agenda in our society of homosexuality and lesbianism. And for someone to say, and it may be the case that not very long from now, for me to stand up here and say this may jeopardize my freedom. But if it is, so be it. Because the Bible says it. And that settles it. Although they know God's righteous decree that they who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to practice these things, it's not new, is it? But look at this. But they also approve of those who practice them. So it's not just the ones who do it, but it's us who sit and watch TV and are entertained by it. Is that what that said? That's what that said. They also approve of those who practice them. Are we entertained by things that God detests? It's going to cause people to go to hell. Are we entertained by those things? Surely not us as Christians. We wouldn't be entertained by that, would we? Maybe we need to think this thing through a little more, don't we? Not only do they continue to do these very things, but they also approve of those who practice them. Don't you find it strange what it is that entertains us? Do you understand the principle that if you laugh at it, you can't oppose it? You understand that principle? If you laugh at it, he got you. It all started, at least in my memory, back with an old show that was it called, it wasn't called Three, is it Three's Company? Yeah, the Odd Couple, maybe Three's Company, where you had these two girls and this guy living with them who claimed to be homosexual, but he wasn't really, so that he could, they could fool their landlord, so forth. And we laughed. And he had us. That's the devil. He had us because we laughed at it. Because he wasn't really homosexual, but we laughed at it. And so the next one was, and we kept laughing, and we're still laughing, but God's not laughing. Living under law, being righteous under law, it's all about you and what you do. And give us a little bit of time, and I'm okay and you're okay. Give us enough time, we'll talk sin out of existence. Won't we? And you take one way, and I'll take another, and you have your truth, and I have my truth. Can you believe where we are? There's some advantages to being old. You've lived long enough that you can see some of the changes. Really. And I don't mean to tell you that everything when I was a kid was the way it should have been. It wasn't. But there were some things. There's some things that are better now. I like a flush toilet better than I do the outhouse. And I like having television and so forth now. You know, I wasn't born in the dark ages completely, but my grandparents were. And they didn't have running water in their house whenever I was a little kid. And for some of you, that's like going back to the Ice Age, you know. But, and for me, it kind of was too, but I thought it was kind of neat for, you know, a day or two. But there are some things that are better now, particularly physically. There are things that are better. There are things that are more convenient. It's like a Russian boy that came to live with us for a while, and, you know, I took him to Walmart for the first time in his life, and he was speechless, you know. Just walked around with tears running down his face. And then, you know, I pull out my weed eater and my lawnmower with the catcher on it and my blower and all this stuff, and I'm doing my yard, and where he's out here helping me, and he said, it's not fair. I mean, he just, in the middle of, we just took a break, and he said, it's not fair. I said, what are you talking about? It's not fair. You have all of this, and we don't have any of this. It's not fair. And he's right. It's not fair. And it wasn't because of any great thing I had done. And I don't know if in the long run it's good or bad. You know, I kind of like it, but that didn't make it good. It might be better if we didn't have a bunch of that stuff. Because we get real attached to it, don't we? Our nice cars and nice houses and all this kind of thing. We get pretty attached, don't we? And as we've already said, we go somewhere to a third world country somewhere. I mean, Tyrone's fixing to go to a place where people have lost their houses, Philippines, flood. And, you know, one of the problems that's happening right now in the Philippines, the rich people are buying up everything. And there's nothing left. I mean, they're going into stores and buying all the food and all the drinking water and all the everything. And so it's a real problem because they've got an inside track and they can get that stuff. You know, as soon as it comes in, they get a call and they can go pick it up because they can pay for it and paid for a lot of it at one time. And so there's a problem. So, Romans chapter 1 is talking about a departure from God. Now, chapter 2, we're going to pick up next time. And I've got to spend at least a couple of weeks on it. One of them, we've got to talk some more about law because I haven't given enough information about law. And I think one of the reasons that we don't appreciate grace any more than we do is because we don't really understand law and some things associated with it. And when we really do, and remember there's two ways to be saved. One of them's by keeping law. That's the only one we know anything about now. So we need to know all that we can know about law. And so we're going to pick up, Lord willing, next time we're going to talk about law, and then And maybe I'm going to join them together, I don't know, but probably in some way will. We're going to talk about how specifically, how's God going to judge this person who never had a chance to hear the gospel? Person who lived and died, and all he ever knew was law. That's all he ever had. And he never heard about a Bible or Jesus or the cross or baptism or the church or any of those things. He never heard about those things. Do you think there are people who live and die that that's the case today? There are. In case you don't know that, there are people who live and die, and they've never heard the gospel. They've never had a Bible in their life. How's God going to judge that person? And we're going to look at that next time. Anybody got a question or comment or observation? Yes, ma'am.
Where I work now, it's very interesting because you see all these people that are busy and they come in and they have high blood pressure and they're overweight and they're not eating good and not sleeping good. And kind of my new little spiel is I say the American Heart Association recommends that you exercise 30 to 45 minutes 4 or 5 days a week. And it doesn't say for those that don't work 50 hours a week. And it doesn't say for the housewife that stays at home. That's what they recommend for
everybody. Yeah.
But everyone justifies away that's not convenient for me. I don't really want to do it, and so it doesn't apply to me. And I think that whole philosophy applies very much to what we're reading about.
I think it does, too.
It's hard to swallow. I don't like it. Therefore, I'm just going to kind of gloss over that, and that doesn't apply to me.
Yeah. You know, I smile every time that thought comes up because I have a good friend who's a mail carrier, and for years he had a walking route. And he went to the doctor, he was having some problems, and the doctor recommended when he got off that he walk. And when he told me that, I said, are you kidding me? You walk all day long. He said, yeah, but he said it's different. I mean, if I was going to dismiss anybody and say, hey, you don't have to worry about walking when you get off, you know, that'd be him. But that's not what the doctor told him. Okay, anything else? All right, I'm going to lead us in a prayer quick.